From NPR News in New York, this is the Bryant Park Project.
Overlooking historic Bryant Park in Midtown Manhattan, live from NPR Studios, this is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. News, information, highway to the danger room. I'm Mike Pesca.
Oh, I wish we were talking to Kenny Loggins. I'm Rachel Martin. It's Thursday, May 15th, 2008. The danger room illusion. This is a reference to a segment we're going to discuss this hour. A company that makes tasers has a new product out, Taser Shields. These things emit this little energy wave that transforms these shields from being kind of a passive-aggressive device to a little bit of an aggressive device. We're going to find out how they work.
Passive-aggressive?
More very
aggressive. What
would
the psychology of a passive-aggressive policing device be?
That's a whole other
segment. I don't know. Maybe you don't want to go into that area. I'm just saying. Maybe you don't want to assemble. Hey, if you want to assemble, that is fine. You know, if you want to look like one of those guys demonstrating and be in that crowd, if that's
that
what
way.
You want with
yeah.
your life, that's fine. I'm just saying. Be a passive aggressive.
We're going to ask about passive aggressive weapons and
like
other
that.
Sundry inquiries. We're going to address them to Noah Shachtman at the blog Danger Room. But before we do that, Mike Pesca has developed his own kind of notion of a device that could revolutionize produce, really.
Yeah, this is really quick, but in the beginning of every week, I buy a week's worth of bananas, mm-hmm. and they go ripe at the wrong time. I hereby call upon Chiquita and associated companies to have a banana color chart available. You take the chart into the store, you hold up the greenness next to the banana, and this way you can time when your banana turns ripe.
Yeah, the reason you're talking about this yesterday, you're walking around with the banana, and you corner me and proceed to unload this diatribe against the banana.
Yeah.
People.
Right. So I throw that out there
anyway.
For free. It could make someone a lot of money. Also, we will be talking about other serious subjects like cats on treadmills and the buzz on the internet, and actually literally serious subjects like an update on violence in Lebanon that began with the shutdown of Hezbollah's communication network. Deb Amos will join us to talk about that. We'll also get today's headlines in just a minute, but first. Chinese state media says the death toll from Monday's earthquake may surpass 50,000. The official death toll right now stands at about 19,500, making the 7.9 magnitude quake the deadliest in three decades there.
Transport planes continue to drop aid and rescue teams continue digging for survivors, but hopes are starting to fade for the estimated 25,000 people still buried under rubble. And many of those who did survive are facing homelessness and water shortages.
The Chinese government has issued a rare public appeal for rescue equipment. NPR's Melissa Block is in the hardest hit region. She says residents are giving the government's rescue efforts mixed reviews.
In the village I visited today, we heard a lot of anger directed toward local officials who people said were corrupt, were bad, were not taking people's concerns seriously, that the relief effort was not going well. At the same time, we heard great praise for the Chinese central government and how it's responded to this disaster. Remember that the Chinese premier, Wen Jiabao, immediately after this earthquake, flew to these most badly hit areas. He's been going to schools. He went to the middle school that I had been to, the school that had collapsed. He's been to hospitals that have collapsed. He's been out here. He is a geologist by training, by the way, so he would know things about earthquakes and what happens.
And Block says that aftershocks continue to make the region a scary place to be.
All through these past 3 days, we have felt a series of fairly strong aftershocks, magnitude 5 and higher. And when they happen, it's a scary thing. Buildings shift, and if you're sitting down, you feel the ground move. People come running out from under the eaves of buildings. No one wants to be near a tall structure in these villages that have already been badly hit, and the structures that are still standing are unstable. There's a lot of fear of what could fall down during these aftershocks.
But in spite of the dangers, rescue efforts continue, even as hope begins to fade for thousands of people searching for their loved ones. Yesterday, Melissa Block spent the day with a Chinese couple frantically searching for their toddler son, who's buried under debris along with his grandparents. Here's a bit of her report.
Hours crawl by. There is no news. Mrs. Fu and Mr. Wang fall into each other's arms. It's now noon. We've been here for several hours. And Mrs. Fu has lost hope of finding her family, it seems. She's saying,
My son, I should have taken you to work with me. You were asking me to take you to work. Her husband is telling her there's nothing we can do about it now. I need you to stay strong. I can't lose you anymore.
The couple's long wait ended in personal tragedy when rescue workers found the bodies of their son and his grandparents.
But more than 72 hours after the quake struck, there are still some happy endings. Yesterday, Chinese state television aired video of a 22-year-old woman peering through a small opening in a pile of debris. She was pulled to safety a short time later.
You can go to NPR.org throughout the day for updates on this story. Now let's get more of the day's news headlines with the BPP's Mark Garrison.